If I didn't know the arm length was an issue, I would have said, hey, you know, 38 right there, he's capable of coming in and being your starting left tackle.
Welcome in to the Hot Read Podcast live on a Master Sunday. I'm your host, Easton Freeze, director of published content here at BroadwaySportsMedia.com. We're also brought to you by the 440 Podcast Network. You can follow me on social media at Easton Freeze. I am joined, as always, by producer JT, who you can follow on social media at JT_Runke. JT, how are we doing?
Who won?
Scottie Scheffler, baby. Ran away with it. He's dominating golf. He's dominating life. Yeah, he's unstoppable. Care. Yeah.
All right, cool. That's the only Masters answer I needed. I hadn't watched a single other thing except, Max Homa, I heard, was pretty electric. I was kind of rooting for him to win, but
he was hanging around. Really
it, so
Scott, yeah, Scotty's a little bit, you got a little Darth Vader going on right now. Unstoppable. I got my, you could argue my Tiger red on today. Got my Masters hat on, feeling good. Players were out there playing good. Well, actually, really just Scotty. The rest of the guys fell apart. Augusta National Golf Course. Difficult, hard golf course. I know that you told me the other day you think you could do better than what Tiger did, which is funny and wrong. Anyways, we're talking about football today. We're talking about the big, meaty men, and we'll be doing both the offensive tackles and the interior offensive line. We're covering all the guys, all the big fellas up front on the offensive side of the ball in today's episode, and we brought along the only man for the job to help us talk through some of these big fellas. He's Stoney Keeley. You know him. You love him. He's all over the place these days. He's over at the Sobros Network, of course, where he does writings and musings and recordings of all sorts, as well as now a full-time member of the Football and Other F-Words podcast here on the 440 Podcast Network and a multi-time guest friend of the Hot Read Podcast. Stoney, we are so happy to have you. How are you doing?
I'm tired, boys. I'm tired.
Uh-oh. Already.
We are not at good. There's a little light at the end of the tunnel trying to get this Stacking the Inbox draft guide together. Zach and I are hard at work to get this thing delivered at some point this week, but I have been, like, the last 48 hours of my life have been staring at a screen, watching tape, refining evaluations, and getting my lists and rankings in order. And I'm kind of like, you know, if you open my window right now and I see a sliver of the sun, I might cringe. I might melt a little bit, but we're powering through, man. We're powering through. Coffee and gin.
Coffee and the, you know what? That's what the doctor ordered to keep you going. The healthiest way to get through draft season.
Yep.
You know, you got to respect the body, treat the body like the temple that it is. And that's right. That's what we're all doing here. It's the draft is a week from Thursday. So we've got like 12 days, 10, 11 something days, like not many days left. I don't know. But I know that Stoney is going to be cranking out content until we get to draft weekend. Everybody here at 440 Sports is going to be cranking out draft content. I'm already losing it. And we here on the Hot Read Podcast are going to be cranking out draft content. Just to give you guys a rundown of what our schedule looks like for the next couple of days. This week, we have got a number of shows coming your way. We were recording both the interior offensive line and the tackle episode here today live. So you're with us live. That's awesome. We appreciate you being here. We'd love for you to be a part of the conversation. We'll have those episodes coming out on your podcast network of choice and on YouTube later this week. One will come out tomorrow. One will come out Wednesday. Tomorrow we'll be live again here, a Monday episode of the Hot Read Podcast. A couple of episodes out of the regular schedule because we got a lot of stuff to cram in here at the end. We'll be talking through the top 11 technically, outcomes, ranking the outcomes for the Titans in the first round, which is a really fun exercise. And a number of you helped vote. I know Stoney at the last minute got his ballot in. JT got his ballot in. So we got a lot of votes. Over 200 people voted. It's ranked. We're going to discuss what the people want, what the trademark, capital D, capital P, the people have decided what they want for the Titans in the first round. So we'll discuss that on Monday. Tuesday, the top 10 running backs, the top 10 safeties, a dual episode then. And then on Thursday, we're doing the edge defenders and cornerbacks. So a lot of draft content coming your way. But let's dive in first here on the Hot Read Podcast today. Let's do the tackles first, fellas, because that is the position the Titans really, truly need. Now, they certainly could use some help on the inside and some depth would be nice. But the top line talent at the tackle position in this class is fantastic. We're going to discuss what is easily the most talented group of tackles in one draft class that I have ever seen. And it's a good thing for the Titans because they need two of them. They don't have a starting tackle on the roster at all. I mean, obviously the left tackle position was solved when they traded away a seventh round pick last, was it Friday, I think, for, I've already forgotten the guy's name, a guy,
Leroy Watson.
Leroy Watson from the Browns. So that obviously left tackle's locked down now, and they'll be drafting a receiver in the first round, right?
Cross it off the list, boys.
Right, exactly. No, they need a left tackle and a right tackle, and it's safe to assume that they'll be drafting those guys. Well, I think the first round, it's likely that they come away with a starting left tackle, and then I certainly would not mind them double dipping at the tackle position. Just an overview of this class. There are, I think it's the top, yeah, the top 11, 13 tackles in this class on the consensus draft board are all within the top 103 overall, which is absurd. It's insane. The top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of those guys are in the top 30. Now, is that how it's going to shake out on draft day? Perhaps not. But that just goes to show how stupid the top end talent and the depth in this group is. And for a team like the Titans, who really need two starters going into next year who are not currently on the roster, if they wanted to try to get a starting tackle in the third round, most years I would tell you, you know, that's not really how this works. You might be able to do that this year, right, Stoney?
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's an opportunity to get a stud franchise guy in the first round or at 38th overall. And I think you can get a guy on the right side of the line, like a Roger Rosengarten, Christian Jones, Blake Fisher. I mean, there's a ton of guys. This tackle class goes, I was talking about this with Zach the other day, and I want to say that I've got like 18 guys in this class that I think could potentially start in the NFL. And that's, you know, a safety measure. It's not even counting like the traitsy deep cut prospects that could develop into something. So like last year we did this podcast, and for me evaluating last year's class, it was Paris Johnson Jr. and then everybody else. And we're talking about like Jalen Duncan and Tyler Steen in my top 10 last year, bit of a reach. And I, you know, at this point I'm looking at the 10th spot this year. Like, man, who do I keep out of the top 10? Because there's so many guys that have really high ceilings in the NFL that, I mean, left or right, I think you're going to get a guy that's got a chance to really play on day three.
I think back to when the Titans drafted Dylan Raiens, right? He was a second round draft pick, like number 52 overall, something like that, in the high 40s, low 50s, somewhere in there, if I recall correctly. And at the time, it was like, yeah, sure, okay, a nice day two tackle prospect who, you know, may develop into a starter. Obviously we know what has become of him, and he's more of a depth guy at this point in his career, or an interior player. But you know, I think about, okay, where is that line of like that caliber of prospect? Where's the Dylan Raiens of this group? And where he came in on that draft class was like, you know, the mid 40s, low 50s, mid 50s. That's the, you know, the guys on the consensus board. It's like the guys at 103, the guys at 105, like you mentioned, it's the Roger Rosengartens. It's the Christian Jones is out of Texas. It's the Javon Foster's out of Missouri. Those are the guys that are more of the, I don't know, but like, I like the swing on a day two kind of guys, and you're going to get them falling. A number of them may fall into day three this year.
For sure. What do you guys think about comparing the two classes of the last 2 years? Where do you think Paris Johnson for you guys would rank among all of these tackles?
So it's a great question. It's one that I wanted us to bring up so we can just go ahead and talk about it. I mean, I regard the top six in this tackle group as you know, a tier to their own. Joe Alt, Olufashinu, Talisa Fuaga, Troy Fontenu, J.C. Latham, Amarius Mims. Those six guys, I think any one of them could arguably be tackle one in most draft classes. Most of them, I would argue, are tackle one in most draft classes. And there's six of them in this one class. I don't know. I would put at least two or three of them above a Paris Johnson, who I loved a lot and I think is awesome. And that's not a knock on him as much as it is, I think, a reflection of how highly I regard these top six guys. I'd have him as tackle three or four in this class, I think.
Maybe fifth for me. Yeah.
Okay. And maybe, yeah, if I really sat here and thought about it and like really tried to parse it out, I'd have a hard time picking who I'm putting below him.
It's a hard conversation to have, because it's like you have Paris Johnson Jr., who has a year of NFL experience underneath him. And that's always now going to like,
right.
Like he's proven in he hindsight, can do the thing.
Right. He had a good year.
In hindsight, he had an up and down year, but mostly towards the end, it looked really promising in what he wanted. And as much as we talk about how good these prospects are, It's also important to realize that the NFL playing tackle is really, really hard. And you don't see, we talk about these top first round prospects as guys who we down the line, we think are going to be generational starters. But time and time again, we see that in the first year, that's not really how that works. It takes time for these guys.
Or second year. Sometimes it takes
exactly. It takes a little bit, and it's because it's really, really hard, and they're going up against really, really good defensive players every single down. But with that in mind, I think looking at the prospect as himself from last year to now, for me, I think it would be hard to put him any lower than I think tackle four. I think I'm like right in the middle of you two, because I think there are a couple of in that top five. When you talk about a Troy Fatanu or a Marius Mims, they have a few more knocks on them or things in their game that I think maybe lend themselves to taking a little bit longer to develop at the left tackle position than a Paris Johnson, who came out and was really able to play the position from the get go. But
fair.
I would not put him as the number one tackle this year.
Yeah, I think it's just an interesting way to highlight just how good this tackle class is from the top. And that's why I brought it up. I didn't mean to steal your thunder. I didn't know we were going to talk about
it. No, I'm glad you did, because I think you're right. It's a great way to highlight the talent, but it's the number one thing that bothers me. I think it's the lack of understanding when you get the folks who I saw somebody on Titans Reddit today. Somebody sent me this screenshot from Reddit where it was like somebody was thinking out loud on Reddit about how, you know, could the Titans send a late day three pick to a team like the Chargers at five just to ensure they don't take a job? Like, how can we ensure Joe Alt gets to seven? And I'm like, guys, Joe Alt, who we're going to talk about, spoiler, he's my top tackle in this class. I think he rocks. I'd love for the Titans to get him at seven. There, you know, think back to how highly folks were talking about Paris Johnson and, oh, to have him fall to 11 for the Titans last year. I think there are at least three guys in this tackle class that are all better than that guy. So to have a non-Joe Alt at seven, it's really super not the end of the world. I promise. It's not a bad thing at all, but we'll get to that. One last question for you, Stoney, before we dive into the actual 10 players that we have on your board and on mine. Talking about these guys that aren't in our top 10, who are still talented prospects, intriguing prospects, for the Titans in particular, if I told you they take a tackle in the first round, right, they get one of these top guys, and then they address the tackle position again in round four or round five, so they get one of those guys between 120, you know, 115 and 160, who's the early day three tackle to you that you're like, if I could hand place him on the if I could guarantee he's a Titans draft prospect, I would do that today. Is there somebody that stands out to you in that way?
I think it would be Christian Jones. I really liked his tape against Alabama. I thought he had a good week at the Senior Bowl, not just in terms of his play during the practices, but kind of he was one of the two guys there that I thought was really getting coached up, but was really open to the coaching. They were kind of teaching him how to strike with his hands. I think he was having problems like going for the shoulder, but like tilting his hand out. And they were like, no, when you do that, your palm's going to strike outside of where you want to hit. And so then on the next play, he's keeping his palm. I'm miming this for the people that are watching on YouTube. This is a reminder to watch on YouTube and not
bingo,
just listen to the downloaded feed. But I noticed his hand more upright, driving forward, hitting where he was aiming. And I kind of fell in love with that. Like, I'm a sucker for a guy that shows he's coachable, that can take what he's being taught in real time and applying it to the very next rep. I think he's a scrappy dude. He's powerful. He's long. I think he checks a lot of the boxes. I'm not sure why he was so low on the consensus board to begin with, but he's a guy that if you could get Joe Alt in the first and pair him with Christian Jones in the fourth, man, you got your bookends right there. I'm happy with it. We're rolling with that.
Yeah, I like a Jones out of Texas as well. The guy for me that, and he may be on your top 10 list, I'm not actually looked. I'd imagine he's not, though. Roger Rosengarten out of Washington. He falls squarely into that category that I love. The guy that played the same position as another guy in this draft class at the same school. And so he's the other one. Like, that guy who I think is universally undervalued, that's a Roger Rosengarten, because Troy Fatanu, the guy that's playing the other end of the line over at Washington, is going to be a first-round pick and is going to be a stud for somebody. I think Rosengarten gets a little bit disregarded as, you know, I'd say he's a developmental prospect with starting upside. I'm not going to get crazy and say that this is going to be a guy that comes in and starts for you right away. But, you know, he doesn't win any beauty pageants, I think, as Dane Brugler put it in the in the beast, but technically I think he's very sound and I like the way that he plays. And I could see him being a starter for somebody. I've heard some things from NFL insiders that are like, this guy is somebody that could go on day two and surprise some folks. He could go higher than you think. Okay. Let's get to our actual top. Sorry. Let me let you speak to Roger Rosengarten.
I was just going to point out he's really good with his hands and I've actually got him at OT 11. So he just missed my list.
Okay. There you go. I think he's either my 11 or 12 as well.
Yeah.
So let's get into the top 10 guys here. And before we do, a formal reminder, if you're with us live, we appreciate you being here. Do us a couple of favors. First of all, head on over to Broadway Sports Media's YouTube page, find this live stream there. So leave Twitter, leave Facebook, wherever you're watching this live, go to the YouTube page. It's Broadway Sports Media. Hit subscribe. Hit thumbs up. Those two buttons right below this live stream are the biggest ways that you can help us here on the show. If you appreciate the content that we produce, we would appreciate you helping us out by pressing those two things. Helps us with the algorithm and all these things that we don't, you know, who cares, whatever. It's fugazi, fugazi. It's the internet. Just click them for us. And then join us in the comments. We've already got Chef Ran and Brady and Papal and Daniel and Shrike. And Glory Day Sports already all up in the comments. We appreciate you guys here for the big meaty men today. If you are not following us on social media, it's at Hot Read Pod on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. And then make sure wherever you get your podcasts, if you miss an episode live, no big deal. Catch the podcast version on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out there because we're there. Okay. Top 10 lists here. Stoney, I've got a guy at number 10 who I want to talk about who I know is not on your list. We've talked about him previously and you're not as high on him as I was or as I am. I recall us doing this episode last year. A certain BYU tackle in last year's class ended up being drafted by the Indianapolis Colts, who I was fond of and fit into my list. You not so much. He started a lot of last year and I don't want to talk about how he played because that's not neither here nor there, but he did play in the NFL and I think that makes me the superior offensive tackle evaluator, isn't that what that means?
Let's see how Freeland's career goes before we start victory lapping.
Because he had such a great first year and everybody in Indianapolis was happy with him having to play. Okay. But in all seriousness, at my number 10 spot is Kieran Amagaji, a tackle out of Yale, who I guarantee nobody knew about, unless you're a big Yalie, I guess, about before this draft cycle. He's somebody that, boy, is he hard to find tape on because Yale not putting out a whole lot of all 22. But when you do look at what he has done in his college career, he strikes me as somebody that I think is going to be an impressive player at the next level, considering where he played in college. You know, playing on a team for Yale that had a whole lot of nothing, playing up against a competition that was consistently a whole lot of nothing, it was a lot of dominance for him. And I know your biggest thing, Stoney, is that you just didn't see him dominate, at least I think. You just didn't like that he wasn't as dominant as you wanted him to be playing at that level. You can correct me if I'm misquoting you. But
no, in a nutshell, yeah, I think okay. That's it. I think when a guy plays at that level, you want to see him just go out and you know, let the bodies hit the floor, like just wrecking people. And I didn't see that, and I kind of felt like that was a bit of a red flag for him.
And generally speaking, I'm with you that that's what I want to see. I guess I just saw it differently from what I've seen. I've seen enough of that to convince me, you know, the traits are there from an athleticism standpoint, from a length standpoint, 95th percentile with length, an 85.5-inch wingspan, 36 1/8-inch arms. He's got the frame to be a dude. 75th percentile weight, 45th percentile height. The body is there. The athleticism is there. It's just a matter of whether or not he goes to the right situation and can refine some of those fine tuning skills. But I think that he can, and that's why he's my number 10 guy. If he were to work, if I'm right, Stoney, from what you have seen from him, what do you think the selling point is on him to say this guy could be an NFL tackle?
Yeah, I think you do see flashes of pretty good play on his tape. I think the length and the athleticism are clear as day. I think when it comes to concerns about him, it's just the rawness. Like I noticed times when I felt like he really reached. It's like he's used to having long arms and I'm just going to reach out and grab the guy.
Sure.
Instead of, you know, stepping into him, kind of closing the gap and guys get around him. But I think there are little things like that, like working through traffic. I felt like he was a little clumsy, but man, when he flashes, I think he's pretty good with his hands, like keeping them mid-level, kind of coiled and ready to strike, not too high, not too low. I think he's got a pretty powerful punch when he throws it. And I think when he does get his hands clamped on guys, he's pretty sticky, and he's got the athleticism, the wiggle to mirror guys. My concern, again, to boil it down to a sentence, is just, you know, if he's not doing this on a snap to snap basis against the Ivy League, mm-hmm. what's going to happen when there's a major uptick in competition? And I should specify, this is not to say, like, I don't think the Titans should draft him, but I think if they were to draft him, it's a long-term plan for a prospect like this. There's no way I would be willing to bet one of my kidneys that he's not going to step in and make an impact as a, sure. as a left tackle, as a rookie in the NFL this season.
And that part,
another,
I agree with.
It'd be yeah. another project, I think, for sure. That's what sure. I came away with him. He also, outside of my top 10, when looking at overall linemen here, I think there are a couple of other interesting just key points about his game. Season-ending injury in 2023, which kept him out of most of the draft process this offseason. So I think that's something big. But like you said, he's a project guy already coming off of season-ending injury. I think for a Titans team right now, who you kind of see them bringing in some already developmental pieces with Leroy Watson throwing away, or not throwing away, but kind of sending off one of their seventh round picks as a flyer to go get mm-hmm. one of these developmental guys already. You can kind of see that this maybe isn't a guy who would fit into what Bill Callahan and this offensive line group wants to do.
Yeah.
I would also add this. He does have some experience playing right guard at Yale mm-hmm. as well. He did play some snaps there. So, I mean, this is another guy you're talking about. I feel like every tackle in this class is like, oh, just kick him inside the guard. But I feel like he is a good candidate for something like that, to make his impact felt sooner on the field, but also, you know, not rely upon him right away as a tackle.
Absolutely. So let's get into the guys that we have in common here. Your number 10 tackle and my number 9 tackle is Kingsley Suamataya out of BYU. For reference, by the way, Kieran Amagaji comes in at number 73 on the consensus draft board. And Kingsley Suamataya is right there on the fringe of day one and day two, 44th overall. I would expect him to be very solidly in the top half of the second round to go somewhere. I'd be very surprised if he slipped into the first round, which has less to do with his talent and more to do with how many incredible guys are in front of him, frankly. But he's a little bit on the light side, 326 pounds. Excuse me, take that back. A little bit on the short side, had it backwards. 15th percentile height, 6'4", but a little bit on the heavy side, 326 pounds, 80th percentile. Has the wingspan that you're looking for, has the arm length that you're looking for. Athletic enough of a player, played at BYU. Stoney, what makes him worthy of being in the top 10 conversation?
I think it's the combination of the power and the speed. He is a pretty freakish athlete, and I think he packs a hell of a punch when he hits. I started my evaluation of him, for those that have kept up with my draft coverage pretty regularly throughout this cycle, I started with the Texas game with him, and apparently that is like the worst possible game you could start with Suamataya, because it was not good. I mean, he was just kind of tentative, missing assignments. It kind of looked like he didn't know who to block. He was misfiring on a bunch of stuff. But then you go and you pop on the Oklahoma tape. I watched Texas Tech as well. He was at the Senior Bowl as well. And you just see like the power in his hands. I a fluid athlete that, to me, this might sound like we're getting really deep into the evaluation here, but how seamlessly he moves his hips to open up run lanes and just completely neutralize rushers is pretty awesome to watch. I think he's a guy that's, because of his athleticism, got a few consistency issues with technique, but what he does flash, I think he can be a lump of clay. Like if you're looking for the quintessential draft and develop player, I think mm-hmm. Kingsley's got a pretty high ceiling.
It's funny you mentioned the Texas tape. I went because I remember reading this the other day. In the first sentence under the weaknesses category in Dane Brugler's The Beast, it talks about frequently caught leaning and needs to be more conscientious of his steps as a run blocker with his pass set depth and parentheses, see 2023 Texas tape. So I think everybody agrees that that's the low point. But as you said, it's that the size, mobility, power combination that he presents. I think that, like you said, the perfect way to sum him up, he is the quintessential draft and develop guy. Going to require a little bit of coaching and some patience, but I think he's a scheme diverse kind of player that is filling all the boxes you're looking for to fit in as a bona fide tackle on your team.
The best comp for him is his nickname, the Dancing Bear, which we talked about maybe has some before the show has some interesting, you know, context to it that
I wasn't aware of it, but apparently
go search on your own. But that was his nickname on the team and kind of in his play style, right? He's this big guy at 326 who plays with some fluidity that you just can't teach at that kind of size. That's the kind of natural talent that I don't know if you believe that the bloodline can be shared, but it is funny to note that he also is cousins with the Sewell brothers. So Penei Sewell is his cousin. You know, he comes from a long line of athletes in family members who did play the position both at the college level and the NFL level. So this is kind of is in his blood to play offensive tackle. And I think that he has some things in his tape that you simply just can't teach with the intangibles, which, like you said, a guy who is a developmental guy who probably won't start at the next level right away. But I think, man, if you can mold that clay into something, he can be a fun guy to watch at the NFL level.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on here to a guy that is on your list, Stoney, but not on mine. And we were talking about this before the show. Jordan Morgan, offensive lineman out of Arizona, who I have listed as a guard, who we'll talk about for my purposes in the interior offensive line discussion in a couple of minutes here on the show once we get through the tackles. He played tackle in college at Arizona, and I know going down to the Senior Bowl, he was one of the guys, Stoney, you were most excited to go and see as a tackle prospect for the Titans who need a tackle. And then as we're driving down there, some of the first measurements of the season come out, and it's, Jordan Morgan, 32 7/8 inch arms, 9th percentile. The length just isn't there for most NFL teams looking for that 34-ish inch arm threshold to be able to play tackle efficiently against these crazy, freaky long edge rushers who are just going to get the upper hand on you if they are so much longer than you. And in this case, he would be on the shorter side against pretty much everybody he goes up against in the NFL. I won't stand for this gaslighting, because last year I was Mr. You gotta give I'm seeing red. I'm forgetting who I'm even talking
about. Peter Skoronski.
Peter Skoronski. Thank you. You got to give Peter Skoronski a chance at tackle. I think he can play tackle. I think he was the best tackle in college. And I know his arms are short, and I know that, like, there's numbers that make you say, but I don't care. Give him a chance. And then I was beaten over the head with a club for the last year into submission, ultimately, to say, okay, fine. He's a guard, which hammock or whatever. They didn't give him a chance. They don't think he can play tackle. Fine. And then here comes along this guy that's clearly a worse lineman in general. And now before the show, I won't say both of you, but JT in particular is like, how dare you put him as a guard only and not a tackle, when I won't stand for this baloney. Suddenly we can't just rock and roll with, the guy's short, he can play guard, when last year I was told you need to just give up the ghost. It's frustrating, and I won't stand for it.
Noted.
I think every situation is different. But I think it was more of me gaslighting you, which I don't think is a rare occurrence on this show and just in general. but still, for me, I think if you had, it's interesting to put him in context. I think you both have him pretty ranked on both of your lists as soon as we get to the interior offensive lineman as well. If he was a tackle, I think he's in that back half conversation. I think he's close to 9-10 range on there. But if you put him all of a sudden into that interior side, I think he's one of the top three, top five guys in this class because of that. I think when you look past his tiny little T-Rex arms, you still see a lot of things on tape that you like.
So, Stoney, what are the things you like about him as a potential tackle prospect? And we'll get to him in more detail in a little bit.
Well, I am like pro give everybody a chance. Like, I do not care. Why not for everybody? And play Skoronski at left tackle, play Morgan at left tackle. I will say this. It's pretty interesting that the Titans have spent some time with Jordan Morgan because they pretty clearly don't need a left guard. So are they just doing their due diligence, or
it is interesting.
Is the arm length not an issue with Morgan? I don't know. I just found that pretty interesting. It's not like we've gotten word that they're, you know, sniffing around a whole bunch of guards this draft cycle so far. They could, and we might not know about it, but I just, from what we've heard, I think that's an interesting little nugget. As far as Morgan goes, I think he's got some really good tape. If you haven't already, watch him go up against Leiatu Latu in the UCLA defense. They've got three edge rushers that are going to get drafted, and Jordan Morgan was playing with his hair on fire. He's really good balance, like very, you don't see him wobble too much in pass protection. And I think he's a prize fighter with his hands. I mean, he just seems to have a knack for knowing when to punch, where to punch, when to clamp down. And once he does get his hands on somebody, he's able to really ride him out of the play. And it's an endearing quality. But I mean, to your point, Easton, like the arm length, it does matter to a lot of teams. There are some teams that have a certain number, and if you don't meet that threshold, you're automatically off the board. They're not even going to consider you. So it was a gut punch when we got to Mobile. Zach and I were pulling up to the convention center to get our media credentials when the news came out, and I just, my jaw dropped, and I just remember Zach saying, "Oh no, Jordan Morgan measurements are in." I'm like, I'm seeing it right now. This is awful, because he would have been a guy that, if I didn't know the arm length was an issue, I would have said, hey, you know, 38 right there, he's capable of coming in and being your starting left tackle week one.
Fair enough. And he's a good lineman. I just don't think he's a tackle. We'll talk more about him when we get to the interior offensive lineman here in a minute, because he's certainly a top 10 guard, if that's what he is in this class. Okay, next up on the list, let's go to a guy that certainly has no length issues, and that's Patrick Paul out of Houston. This is a guy we also saw at the Senior Bowl, and he has the size you are looking for. Man, 6'7" and a half, 331 pounds, 87th and 91st percentile respectively, 36 and a fourth inch arms, 86 and a fourth inch wingspan, 96th and 97th percentile. It does not get any sweeter than that. He is somebody that I know you're a little bit higher on him than I am. You have him above a Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma, who we'll talk about here in just a second. I see the two relatively similarly. I think one of them is liable to sneak into the first round of this draft class, but probably not both. On the consensus board, they've got Paul at 66 and Morgan at 36. I think this is lagging behind. I think Patrick Paul is a guy that the NFL is going to like a whole lot, maybe more than most draft analysts in the media. And if he were to slip into the first round, I wouldn't be completely shocked if a Kansas City Chiefs at 32, one of those teams in the like 28 to 32 range that is in need of a tackle, I could see them going for a Patrick Paul. What are the upsides with Paul, who I would say he's still on the more developmental side? He's got the size to boot, but some of the technique needs refinement. Talk me through him as a prospect.
I think we're overthinking Patrick Paul a little bit. From a play style standpoint, the book seems to be really good, athletic, elite pass protector, but can't run block to save his life. I don't really see that. I mean, you could point to flashes in every game where he does a good job of getting his shoulders down, keeps his feet churning, and kind of eliminates the rusher on the play. There's a play in particular in the Texas San Antonio game when he just completely like enveloped, like swallowed a rusher whole and just completely sealed a run lane on a touchdown run that I'm watching this and I'm like, you know what? I think maybe we're overthinking Patrick Paul here. The length you mentioned is awesome. I mean, he gets kind of pulled outside from an edge rusher that tries to cross back inside, which I think is like kind of like there's a trend among tackles in this class. There's a lot of guys that kind of give up the inside setting a little too far. But with Patrick Paul, he gets a little too far out. The guy cuts inside, and he has these massive long arms that he just like, okay, extends his arm, wraps the guy up, pulls him back into his body, and keeps him away from the quarterback. So I think there is plenty that is raw about his game, and I think that he is someone that is going to need a little bit of development, but I don't think he's as far off as the consensus seems to think, and I think you're absolutely right. I've seen a couple of national people say they're hearing whispers that the NFL is much higher on Patrick Paul than draft media is, so I won't be surprised if he's one of the names that we kind of raise our eyebrows on night one, like, how did this guy get here? Because I think he's like built in a lab to play offensive tackle. And I just don't think the weaknesses are as weak on tape.
And what you just said there, the difference that maybe the NFL is a lot higher on him than draft media is because I think when you talk to the guy as well, he's just a good kid. He was a two-time, I believe, captain at Houston. When you talk to the guy, he really cares about his craft, as Dane Brugler wrote it, but you can tell it that he loves to play football, and this is something that he truly loves. And like you said, that's just something that in NFL draft media you just don't get to see. We don't know how these interviews go, but I could very much see, like you said, a team really fall in love with that guy in the late first round, early second round, and you see him go a little higher than the consensus is. And I think that's also why he's been such a popular mock for the Titans in the second round if they were to go with wide receiver, because like you said, he has all of the traits. He just needs them to be a little more refined, but also his character as well, I think, would be a really good fit in Tennessee.
He's a fascinating option if the Titans were to consider taking a tackle in the second round, in part because I've seen him comped a couple of different times to a Chucks Okorafor, who's a guy that was on the Titans radar earlier in this process. And I think people were rightly saying, hey, you know, bringing in a Chucks Okorafor would be a nice addition to this team. I think it would fit well. But maybe you have the young version of him at the second round in this draft class in a Patrick Paul.
How about that? That's pretty spicy. How about that? I like to hear that.
All right, let's get to the next guy. How about a little Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma, who is, he's my tackle 7, I believe, in this draft class. And he is your tackle 8. So you are higher on Paul than on Guyton. But he is most commonly talked about as kind of the runt of the litter of these top tackles. The top 6 guys get the elite first round tackle treatment. And then there's Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma. In terms of the measurables, he's a well-rounded prospect. He's got the height and weight you're looking for, perfectly long enough in terms of reach, 34 1/8 inch arms, scored in the 60s or higher in all of his athletic testing numbers. So athletically, he's there. And I think folks, you know, they see him as a right tackle. Something that goes underrated is the fact that Oklahoma had a left-handed quarterback. So they were trusting him on an island quite often to protect the blind side of their quarterback. That's something that you don't just let anybody do. I've seen a number of other metrics that showed he was not just on that blind side, but like I mentioned, trusted on an island without help as much, if not more, than any of these guys in his last year in college. What do you like and not like about a Tyler Guyton, Stoney?
Well, Guyton's tape is a real mixed bag. I mean, there are times that I would watch him and be like, you know what? Why is everybody hating on this guy? Like, he's a perfectly fine right tackle. Then there's other guys.
And you go, oh, here's why.
There's other times I watch and I'm like, does he know the ball was just snapped? Like, does he know they're playing a football game right now? But I say Tyler Guyton is the mystery box. He could be anything. It could even be a franchise right tackle.
How about that?
When I was talking about Christian Jones and the Senior Bowl and getting coached up, one of two guys that I really noticed applying it, Guyton's the other one. I mean, they were really working with him on his hand usage. He had a bad habit of like wanting to wrap up, like the hands would come around instead of up and into the chest. And so they were kind of coaching him on it, and he would get the hang of it. And then there'd be like the very next rep, Darius Robinson would hit a spin move on him, cut outside, and the whole time Guyton's just standing there looking at him. I'm like, you got to move at a certain point, bro. You got to do something. And that's like what people say about Patrick Paul is what I feel Tyler Guyton actually is. But he is such a fever dream of speed and athleticism that, man, if you hit on this guy and you've got a good coach that can really develop and lean into the things that he does well, I mean, you've got a Pro Bowl caliber, like frame, speed, athletic profile. It's there. You just got to get it out of him.
A couple of things you notice in some of the higher level draft analysis, and I keep referencing Dane Brugler's The Beast because it just came out. It's the freshest on all of our minds.
Gold standard.
And it's the best, right? Mm-hmm. You catch little nuggets where he very clearly intentionally leaves little hints without outright mentioning some things that he's heard, some behind the scenes things. And the thing that stood out to me for Tyler Guyton was he goes on in the summary of Guyton to say, as long as he stays motivated and healthy, he will continue on an upward trajectory. When you throw out that motivational word as a Dane Brugler, there's something to that. That's not, you're not just throwing that out willy nilly. So you'd imagine he's heard from some coaches, there may be some motivation issues in the past. And then the health thing, that part we know that there have been some reasons to believe health could be an issue for him in his NFL career. But when you set those things aside, I really do think that he's going to be a fantastic draft option for somebody in the late first, early second. Again, by dearth of having so many awesome tackles in this class, he's the kind of guy that I think, you know, you'd see somebody come away with at 19 in a regular draft class and they're tackle 4 or maybe 5. And everybody's like, yay, they draft, you know, they got the maybe the worst starting tackle prospect in this class. But somebody in this class is going to get him in the late 20s, early 30s, if not later. And it's going to be really fantastic value.
Who was the Jaguars draft pick last year? Because I Anton feel like
Harrison.
Anton, yeah. Harrison. It does this not feel like the exact same scenario?
Well, again, also out of someone, Oklahoma, correct?
I believe so, yeah. Right? So maybe there's something about, maybe there's an aura that these Oklahoma prospects give off.
Low-level starting tackle factory, Oklahoma.
maybe there's just something to it, the aura that they give off when coming out of Oklahoma, that you just makes them feel like, yeah, they're going to be probably a safe bet to play for a decent time in the NFL, but man, there's just really nothing that jumps out at you that really makes you believe that this guy could be an everyday starter from the get-go. And I feel like that's exactly what we get with Tyler Guyton. Now, I do think that he has, like you said, he has the right pieces. Just putting them together and going to the right situation is going to be the big piece for him if he can get to the next level and produce at that level.
All right, you want to move on? Let's get to these top six guys. This is what I'm really here for, folks. These top six tackles who I'm willing to say they will all be first round picks, barring like medicals behind the scenes that we're just not privy to. You could always see a guy fall and it's like, oh, there must be something to it that we're not privy to. But assuming that they are all of decent health and they're not massive locker room liabilities, which I don't think we've heard those things about any of these players, they'll all be first round picks. And I don't, in the same vein as the wide receiver conversation this year, the top three guys, people have them in different orders. I don't really hold it against you what order you have them in. With these top six tackles, I'm not super holding any order against you with these guys, because I think they all have something about them that is undeniably elite. They all have at least one elite quality or a level of elite upside or elite size and strength. There's something about them that you can really latch yourself onto. And there's an element of pick your flavor with some of these guys, depending on what your team needs, what you're looking for, whether it's right or left side, stronger run blocker or stronger pass protector. There's a lot of variety in here. At number six, for both you and I, Stoney, and I think the consensus as well, let me double check. Yeah, the consensus board has him as tackle six. It's Amarius Mims out of Georgia, 23 overall. He is the, is it unfair to say he's the model build for a tackle?
I'm cool with that.
91st percentile height, 94th percentile weight, 97th percentile wingspan, 95th percentile arm length, 97th percentile hand size, athletic as well, 85th percentile broad jump, which was bonkers. 340 pound, nearly 6'8" man getting off the ground and just propelling himself across the turf there at Lucas Oil Stadium. Something truly to behold. This guy would be tackle one in, I think, next year's draft class if he'd just gone back to school. Now, he didn't, and he didn't really need to because he's already going to be a first-round tackle. But he's only got 8 starts under his belt with Georgia. There have been some health concerns both in college, and then he, I believe it was running his 40, right, at the combine where he pulled up a little tweak in one of his legs. Those are really the only things that I'm aware of that are the downside for him. You're not sure. The experience, the sample size is small. But what he put on tape in those 8 games, shows a starting NFL tackle, right?
I think he has a couple of troubling tendencies.
Okay.
I think there's an added layer to the lack of tape. It's that the tape that he does have is kind of inconsistent, in my opinion, anyway.
Okay.
I think he lowers his head and lunges a bit too much. And it could be a coaching thing. It could be a play where they're like, hey, we just want you to knife ahead at whatever's in front of you. We don't care what you're paying attention to. I won't pretend to have the Georgia offensive playbook at my disposal. But I just noticed several times that like he would lower his head and he would jump and he would take weird angles where he'd end up on the ground. And I'm like, well, I don't know what he's doing. When he's on, he's a dictator. I mean, he strikes me as like the Hulk waving Loki around in the Avengers movie. And it's really impressive. I was talking to our buddy James Foster about Mims at the Senior Bowl this year. And I kind of told him about the reservations I had about the tape. And he was telling me his game against Ohio State, the 2022 playoff semifinal game, some of his favorite tape that he'd watched this season. And he told me he wondered if what Amarius Mims's stock would have looked like if he had just not come back for 2023. And that Ohio State game was the last game that concluded his sample size of college film. You know, he's probably a lock to be a top 10 pick. And I think it's really interesting to think about Mims in that regard.
It was just crazy with even less of a sample size.
Yeah, exactly. But to think of the athletic profile, the freak that he is, the prototypical build, size, speed, all that stuff, like if you're building a left tackle or a right tackle in the NFL, you want it to look like this guy. And I think that
he's the ultimate ball of clay for some coach. I mean, somebody's salivating about getting their hands on this guy.
Yeah. It's a bit of a dice roll, but I think that you've got a pretty good, because the ceiling is so high, I think he's too good to pass up in the first round.
Absolutely. And I agree with you that if you are looking at this guy as, why am I drafting what this is on tape in the first round? Like, I have some reservations about that. I can agree that there are some things on his tape. There's inconsistencies. The highs are absolutely there, but there are some lows that concern you. So I can get behind the idea of, why would you take this guy based on the tape in the first round if that's all it was? But that's not what it is, right? It's the fact that he is so young and is so unpolished. You are taking him this high because you're getting kind of a discount on a guy that shows true top 10, top 5 draft pick ability. It's just in limited spurts, and you don't quite know for sure what he is, but you think you see what he could be based on what he's shown us.
How is this for a player comp? Jeffrey Simmons.
The tackle version of a Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah, the offensive tackle version of
somebody's going to get him in the 20s and be delighted and probably have an awesome. I think that he, you know, if I was able to put each of these top six tackles into a, you know, a simulator and the best outcome for all of them, like I see what the highest high is for each of these guys. I think that Mims is the best. I think he has the highest ceiling. It's just a matter of whether he gets anywhere close to it.
And that's why I think that's why I think he still is touted as a first round pick. It would be different if he played just 8 games anywhere else. But the fact that he played at Georgia, the fact that he had so much success at Georgia, even when we talked to him at the combine, you know, why do you think that you're ready for this next step? Because despite only playing 8 games, his answer, I mean, he was going up against some of the best pass rushers over the last 3 seasons that have come out of the NFL draft every single practice. So I think when you look at it that way, from the system that he's come from, I think I'm with you guys on that one. He on my board would probably be a little higher. I just am that in on this guy because of how young he is and the idea of an Amarius Mims. Even as Glory Day Sports here, I mean, looking back at some of his high school tape where he is just maybe 3 times the size as some other kids, you know,
I showed it to my brother and he said, were they letting him play middle schoolers? And I said, no, those are high schoolers, my friend. Yeah.
It's absolutely insane. It's one of the funniest pictures. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend you go check it out. But yeah, I mean, it just is the prospect of all prospects. Like this is the guy that you dream of getting your hands on for some of these offensive line coaches. And it'll be really interesting to see how high maybe he goes, because there may be some people in a building banging the table for him, saying that this guy can be a game changer.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to these top five guys and let's consult the board here. A little bit of a different order for you and I, Stoney. Generally speaking, let's see. So we have the same top two guys, and then it's a mix with three through five. Can we start with Talisa Fuaga out of Oregon State, who is my tackle five? He's your tackle three. And I have changed my opinion on where he comes in on this list like seven times in the last 2 months. Here's why. What he offers is a pretty unique. I think if you look at him in the grand scheme of these top five tackles, his skill set might be the most different in the sense that he is, I think you once put it as don't let Talisa Fuaga find you on the field. Like, don't let this man, he's like Michael Myers in an old school horror movie. If this man finds you and God forbid gets his hands on you, it's over. You're done. It's finished. He is a nasty, nasty prospect, easily, in my opinion, the best run blocking prospect in this group. He just leaves a little bit to be desired in the pass blocking category. But what do you see from this guy to make him your third tackle in this draft class?
It is the sheer violence, how easily he is able to displace people attempting to rush. You're right. I think there are questions in pass pro. I think he has a tendency to kind of like the way that he sets sometimes, it's almost like it's this issue that I mentioned earlier where sometimes guys are able to kind of cross inside. I think there are times when maybe rangy guys, I noticed Gabriel Murphy do it a couple of times in the UCLA game, are able to just kind of get just below and just dodge his hands a little bit, sink their hips and get around him. And he ends up chasing guys. I don't think he's got the elite recovery speed to get back to rushers in those situations, but man, like nine times out of 10, he's going to get his hands on you. And I thought he had an awesome Senior Bowl week. Mm-hmm. There's a play that like Javon Solomon is running at him full speed. And I swear, this might be one of those like urban legend folklore myths that have just spiraled out of control in my head. But I swear he just put his arm out, just like politely put his arm out. And Javon Solomon just completely stopped.
Like Superman stopping a speeding train. Yeah.
And I'm watching him, and I really like JC Latham's hand strength, his grip strength, but I don't know that any lineman in this class really fires his hands and uses his hands as a weapon the way that Fuanga does.
That's fair. You look at the athletic and physical profile, 48th percentile height, 78th percentile weight, 15th percentile arms, 25th percentile wingspan, comes in with 33 and an eighth inch arms. Now, that's not necessarily prohibitive, in my opinion, to play on the outside in the NFL. I've heard a handful of folks who I respect and trust in the draft media market talk about him as somebody they see working best as an interior player at the next level. You know, we've got, you know, we say 34, that's the benchmark, and it is for most teams. But we've seen in recent years a handful of guys with roughly this exact same arm length come in, play tackle, and play it well. Panay Sewell, I believe, has the exact same length arms. Rashawn Slater with the Chargers, also sub 34 inch arms. Those guys in recent years have been top 15, top 10 players drafted, have played tackle, and have played it really, really well out of the gate. So I don't see that as necessarily keeping you off the edge as an offensive lineman. But Stoney, do you see a world in which he just can't cut it as a tackle?
Yeah, I mean, I do. As much as I like him as a prospect, it is that play at the edge. Like when he gets in there with really twitchy, bendy pass rushers, and he ends up in situations where he's chasing them, I don't think that's good. And I think that is something that, you know, we'll kind of have to see how he adapts over the course of his career. But I think he does have the athleticism to do it. It may just be a matter of footwork, you know, get in the lab and kind of correct some of these things, and maybe there's no issue. But I do think that's the reason so many people project him kicking inside to guard.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Let's get to my tackle four, your tackle five. Troy Faitanu, who I texted you about a couple of days ago, and I said, man, I just, all six of these guys have gotten a lot of press, and, you know, some more than others, but if I had to pick the guy that I felt was getting not enough, it might be a Troy Faitanu out of Washington. He, and I was listening to, again, Dane Brugler on the Athletic podcast the other day talk about some of these guys, and he was saying that whenever we had talked to Western scouts, guys that were covering Western college football, you know, who's the guy that you just have no doubt about in your entire region, the entire American West? And the guys they come back with are your favorite prospect in this draft class, Stoney, in, man, I get so bad with names when we just start throwing names out. Help me out here. Wide receiver out of Washington.
Roma Dunze.
Thank you. I just start blanking. Roma Dunze. I know, right? Like, duh. Roma Dunze and Troy Faitanu, both on Washington, both guys that they just don't see being bad pros. He's not the tallest guy in the world. Third percentile height, 6'3 3/4", but 63rd percentile weight. His arm length, perfectly fine, 67th percentile, north of that 34-inch benchmark. He doesn't, on tape, there's nothing that really pops as like, holy cow, oh my God. But it's just so consistently clean. It's so consistently on time, so consistently what you're asking him to do. He just doesn't really miss a whole lot. And that's what I like a lot about a Troy Faitanu. What about you?
Yeah, I think he's like lighting a firecracker and throwing it in the toilet. You know, like he's just that's going to explode on every play. And I think he's scrappy. He's aggressive. I love his hand usage. The thing that concerned me was like a lack of raw power because of his height. Yeah. And when
he
they
asked blow you away kind of, in that regard.
Yeah. When they try to line up and run the football 3 yards in a cloud of dust, like run down the middle of your defender that's in front of you. He doesn't really have that raw power, but what I think makes him so complete as a prospect, it's almost as if he understands that. And so he's really good at dropping his hips, using his hands to create leverage in the run game. And because of that, he's able to toss guys out the club. So I love him. He's scrappy, violent. I think he can play tackle. I think he can play guard. I heard some people say, you know what? He's center. He's got the build to play center. Like, see what he looks like snapping a ball too. One of the most versatile, scrappy, feisty offensive linemen in this class.
There. JT, any comment on you want to get to these top three guys? I know we're trying to keep it short, and I appreciate you regarding our time here, but I don't want to cut you out of the conversation.
Yeah, I am the time arbiter. I'm the one who continues to keep the show on the road if the we TVA. Need to. But you know exactly right.
The timekeeper.
Troy Faitanu, you versatility is the thing I think with him. As we talk about these different guys, I really like how Stoney put with Talisa Fuaga, just like the Michael Myers aspect of he's going to get you, that strength, the hand placement. With Troy Faitanu, the versatility in his game that like scouts have been saying and like teams have been maybe saying, I could see this guy playing any of the five positions on the line. I think you could put him anywhere and he could probably succeed. And I think that's something that is so valuable to a lot of these teams in the first round when you're talking about maybe the difference between a Troy Faitanu and a Talisa Fuaga or a J.C. Latham in that maybe 10 to 20 range. I think it's going to be very maybe just placement dependent and fit for him to see where he could go. He could go to a Cincinnati Bengals and sit behind the two Trent Browns and learn how to play tackle at that level. He could go to the Seahawks and be an impact starter right from the get-go in the guard. He could even maybe fall to a Dallas Cowboys and find himself on the interior of that line. This guy is like, I think the Joker wild card of this draft, that I could see him going as soon as 10 and as late as 25. It's just the preference, I think, in this class. But when we talk about these different traits with the top three guys coming up, and then also a Fuaga and a Faitanu, the one that I keep coming back to is versatility and the confidence in that versatility.
And I agree, it's that movement ability that's such a huge plus for him. However, Stoney, folks talk about him, and maybe you want him on the inside because the idea of this guy is your pin and pull. I mean, a pulling guard in Troy Faitanu would be unstoppable. It'd be delicious. And yes, that movement ability would be phenomenal as an interior player. I don't see why you would do that if you needed a tackle, because he's, you know, what's great as a tackle is being able to move well, and he can do that. I see him utilizing that movement skill on the outside in the highest added value to your team. And so I think a team taking him and not playing him at tackle, if they need a tackle, would be pretty foolish.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he deserves a shot at tackle, but I also am not going to blame a team that needs a guard and they're sitting there in the 15 to 20 range. And they're like, you know, you're looking at the options of maybe a Cooper Beebe or a Troy Fautanu, then go with the guy that can move well. Like I won't have any gripes with that whatsoever.
If you're a team in need of an interior player and you have Fautanu listed as he's on your interior board, is he your guard one with a bullet?
Run that by me again. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. If you're a team that needs an interior player, you need a guard, and you have Fautanu on your interior list, is he your guard one with a bullet?
Probably.
I think he is for me as well. I can see a team doing that. Let's get to these top three guys. And Stoney, you were once on a fantastic show, talking about a J.C. Latham out of Alabama, who is my tackle three, your tackle four. I believe you said that if he were a left tackle, he would be considered a top three, maybe top two tackle in this class. Really, no question. Mm-hmm. And Titans fans have generally not been super receptive to the idea of taking him in the first round because they love Joe Alter Olafashinu more, which is warranted, and you and I both do. But I don't see the guy, these top three guys in particular, I see them as really, really close. Mm-hmm. Alt, Fashinu, Latham, I like them all, and I think they'd all be fantastic top 10 picks. I won't be shocked if any of them are a top 10 pick, just teams looking for their guy, picking their flavor. He's got everything you're really looking for. He just played right tackle in college.
Yeah, and that was the context that I think people missed out on, because people grilled me over that. They're like, oh, but he played right tackle. He didn't play left tackle. I'm like, no, what I'm saying is if his tape at right tackle was as good at left tackle, like if he played left tackle and his tape was as good as it is playing on the right side, he would be a consensus top five pick. There wouldn't even be a conversation about it. Probably even the best offensive tackle in this draft class. That's how good his tape at right tackle is. I like Latham. I think he's a strong, powerful guy, probably the strongest. If you're just judging based off of the tape, I think he probably is the strongest. Grip strength, punch, that sort of thing. I think he's far more athletic than people give him credit for. It's like he didn't do the athletic
test. Oh, but he didn't test, Tony. So he must be
now everybody's
bumping a log out there.
Everybody's this guy running with that. I'm like, watch the tape. He looks plenty athletic. There are times that I feel like he gets pushed back a little bit because he's not as quick to the edge as the rusher. So where, you know, the spot where he anchors and he's supposed to meet the guy, edge rusher's already there, so like his feet aren't set, but he still wins the rep because he's just so naturally strong, like just gets his hands on him and nullifies the rush. And you could point to stuff like that and say, okay, well, maybe in the NFL, more polished seasoned guys that know what they're doing can exploit that a little bit, and his tendency to not have his feet set on 100% of the plays. But it's a very minor nitpick as far as I'm concerned. I think this guy is really all four of my top four. I would put Fuanga in the category as well. I think they're all incredibly polished, and it's just a matter of pick your flavor. Who do you want? What style do you want?
I mean, two years of experience in the SEC, and he's going to just be 21 years old in his rookie season in the NFL. 80th percentile length, 90th percentile size. He checks all of the boxes. Yeah. And I think he'd be a fantastic option for the Titans. If they were to trade back and get a J.C. Latham at 9, 10, 11, 12, I'm super stoked, and I think fans should be too.
I'm with you.
All right, let's get to these top two guys who I think there's been some overthinking done this draft season. Folks wanting to, you know, move these guys around. Like, who's the real tackle two? It's Alt and then who? During the season, we talked a lot about how actually tackle one is Olufashinu out of Penn State. And who's gonna emerge as tackle two? And then things happened, and he had a bad game here or there, and Joe Alt really established himself as a premier player. And so now we're at the point where he is tackle two in this class, but I think he's pretty firmly tackle two for me for a lot of the same reasons that we loved him during the college season. He's got the prototypical size. He is maybe the best just pure pass protector in this class. He's really, really refined in that department. What do you love about Fashanu?
It's the athleticism in pass pro. He's a seasoned guy. He's got consistent footwork, consistent hand placement. I really don't have an answer as to why he's dropping. I don't know if it's the hand size. I don't know if he's getting into interviews and telling people he likes to kick dogs and cook kittens. I don't know why he's
might hurt his dog a little bit if he were to do that.
Because the tape is still the tape. And I like his tape so much that I told Zach on, I think it was Football and Other F Words a couple of weeks ago, that, like, you know what, if they miss out on Alt, Adunze, Neighbors, if they stick and pick Fashanu at 7, I'm not going to complain about it.
Me neither. And that's not an unrealistic scenario. You know, you could see Alt going at 5. You could see Neighbors going at 6. And then, you know, I know that we all love Rome Adunze. There's a lot of reason to love Rome Adunze. I think that the smarter pick at 7, if it's between Fashanu and Adunze, I'm still going Fashanu. I think that they are relatively similar. They're both top 10 caliber draft picks. In a vacuum, maybe Rome Adunze is a higher prospect on your board, but man, this team needs to tackle so badly. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the drop off between Alt and Fashanu is that big at all. He's certainly worthy of a top 7 pick.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm completely with you. And people cite the Ohio State tape all the time. I don't think it was as bad as people make it out to be. And I'm going to borrow a take from our buddy Jake at Glory Day Sports. The difference between Joe Alt's game versus Ohio State and Olu Fashanu's game against Ohio State is pretty marginal. And nobody's talking about Joe Alt's game against Ohio State. So mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Not a big deal. Not a big deal in my book.
But the one, maybe the one red flag with Fashanu is somehow he has Kenny Pickett's hands. I don't know how. He's 0th percentile hands. I think 8.5-inch hands, which, I mean, Stoney, you can maybe speak to this better than I can. Folks talk about, like, well, the hand size, it matters for the lineman. And to an extent, I think it's more grip strength matters than hand size. And oftentimes hand size is a direct correlation to grip strength. But did you ever once on tape watch him and be like, his hands aren't strong enough, man. He's letting these guys loose.
No, I had no idea. And I honestly, not to take shots at anybody, but I have never once heard anybody say that small hands for an offensive lineman is bad.
Right. I think weak hands for an offensive lineman is bad, but weak size hands, does not matter. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Small hands. I've never heard anybody say that.
All right. Let's talk about the number one tackle in this class. He's my number one player. He's your number one player at this position. It's Joe Alt of Notre Dame. I'm already not looking forward to the Titans. I'm looking forward to them taking him at 7. I would love for that to happen. I am fond of that. If they don't trade back from 7, Alt at 7, lock it in, run the pick up there. I'm all about it. However, I'm already not looking forward to the fact that we have been on the nuance train with this whole tackle situation, this entire draft cycle, and by proxy of talking up some of the other prospects, folks are going to think that we were anti-Alt. Sure. I've said it as many times as I possibly can. He's my favorite tackle in this class. I think if you are picking a tackle at 7 and he's there, you take him. Do I like a trade back option? I really do. But that has nothing to do with Joe Alt. It has everything to do with where this team is in terms of team building. Alt has it all. He's a really fantastic prospect. 98th percentile height, 71st percentile weight. He's got the length you're looking for, clear in that 34-inch threshold. Was elite in college, both as a run defender or a run blocker and a pass defender. Are there any bad things you can say about Joe Alt, Stoney? I mean, like, maybe the high end wow, blow you out of the water stuff that he put on tape isn't as high as some past top 5 tackle draft prospects. But other than that, I don't really know what the downside is with this guy.
Yeah, I think he's a pretty complete prospect, and I think that's what makes him OT1 in my book. It's that you don't have the one or two things that you just really question. I think there are times when he's kind of late to anchor, and it's funny because you can look at it like, oh, well, he has recovery speed, but then you have to add the layer that, well, there's usually a reason he has to recover. Mm-hmm. And it's because maybe he's not dropping the anchor as quickly as he should. I like that he has really strong, once he establishes his base, he's got a really strong set and doesn't give up a whole lot of ground, but he does stop his feet sometimes in those situations, which not a good thing. He bends at the waist, gives a little flexion when guys try to hit him with speed to power. So, you know, you kind of pair those things together. Yeah, you can probably come up with a game plan to get around a player like that. I know Greg Cosell was critical of his hand play usage
style, basically.
And, yeah, and how he doesn't fire his hands. Mm-hmm. I see that on tape too. You know, I don't think he's got Fuanga's hands out there where he's, you know, delivering knockout punches on every snap. But I do think he's good with his hands, independent hands, you know, striking here with the left, moving here with the right, that sort of thing. There's some technique things that he's really clean on. And man, I don't know. Like I just, he checks all the boxes for me.
That's fair. JT, anything to add about Ault?
He's going to be the
good player.
I'm trying to find a negative. I think the negative that I keep coming back to is that get ready to have zero quotes from this offensive line. But
oh, it's a huge, he's a huge media negative. Yeah, no, it's
and right. I don't think that's an inherent downside. You know, what we see from the pony show of the combine versus what he's doing in interviews behind the scenes is something we'll never know. I haven't really seen anything that would tell me that those have been negative in that aspect. I think much like a Brock Bowers, he just the media side of it is not his strong suit and never will be.
He's not filling Taylor Lewan shoes, right? Exactly. He's not coming in and being Taylor, not close.
But he doesn't need to be because this team just really needs a stable guy who can get in there from day one. And I think that's why so many people are so much higher on a Joe Ault than they are an Olufoshanu or a Fashanu or a JC Latham. This Titans team has needed a staple guy to hold things down since Taylor went down a year and a half, 2 years ago. And when you tell them that there's a guy who can do that and fill that hole, done, sold, signed, sealed, deliver. However, if you tell them that this guy maybe isn't able to do it right away, but he can do it in a year, that's where you start to lose them. And I just don't understand because some of the guys who can do it in a year or two, well, when you're really hard. Contending,
patience is no fun.
Maybe going to be better. But I like you said, all these guys, the top three, JC Latham, Olufoshanu, Fashanu, Joe Ault,
right.
All three of these guys, I think if you take them either in a trade back to maybe 10 through 12 or taking them at 7, I think all three of them in this system can find a lot of success.
You've got Ault at 9 on the consensus board, Fashanu at 14 on the consensus board, Fuaga at 15, Fatanu at 19, Latham at 20. They're all going to be first-round picks. I would imagine most, if not all of them, go in the top 20. And I think they're all going to be really good players in the NFL. I think they all have the potential to be really, really good players in the NFL. So I am stoked to see where these different tackles fit and see where they develop. And I think the Titans are likely to have one. And I will be really ultimately probably happy with any of these guys because they rock. So this tackle class is great. And we appreciate everybody listening to the top 10 tackles in the NFL draft class. Tomorrow, Monday the 15th, we'll be live again. JT and I are talking through all of the multiversal options the Titans have at the number one or in round one at the number 7 pick overall. We're going to talk through our rankings of what could happen and based on what does happen, what might happen after that. We'll talk through all of those possibilities tomorrow, rank them, have a good time. It's all based on the survey that I did on Twitter that hundreds of you voted on. So if you voted, come and hear about how those results turned out. They really are fascinating. And then on Tuesday, JT and I will be talking through running backs and safeties. And then on Thursday, we'll be back again, another double episode talking through edges and cornerbacks. And then next week is draft week and we'll have content for you like every single day. It'll be a good time. So tune in to all of our content and all of the 440 Podcast Network and all of the Broadway Sports Media Podcast Network content for the next couple of days as we near the draft just 1 week from Thursday. Until then, for producer JT, I'm your host, Easton Freeze, and for our guest, Tony Keeley, we appreciate you listening. This has been the Hot Read Podcast, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.